If only you could smell what I can smell. As Roger Overall getting uncomfortable. It's not you.
I'm wearing deodorant, you know. Well, I do take offence of this. I mean, this is ridiculous. I smell rather meaty, don't I? And foodie. We're looking at food stands. That's what you're alluding to, I hope.
I definitely was alluding to the variety of food laid out before us. We're underneath the very large stony facade of the Royal Festival Hall. We can see the London Eye and a number of other buildings pitted with windows.
The Shell Tower.
Is that what it's called? The Shell Tower?
I think so.
You shouldn't know more about London than me. I picture you living in green valleys in Ireland somewhere.
I did live here for 9 years. Oh. And I've actually been up there. I've been up to the top of that tower. And I
love the fact you're pointing.
Yes.
In the future, people will see this on audio.
they will, because they'll be able to retro-engineer audio and they'll go, that's what they look like. And I look like Brad Pitt, just in case you're an engineer in the future and you're doing this. But yes, I did point on audio. What an idiot. and here's me, a podcaster and everything. But yes, I lived in London for 9 years. Well, I lived in Richmond and Twickenham for 9 years. And then I moved to Ireland.
And this is the voice of Roger Overall, as I mentioned a moment ago. Podcaster, photographer. You do lots of other things as well.
I do a bit of filmmaking and I do cartooning. And what else do I do? I think we're limited at that, really.
Limited, he says. I always think about online artists and cartoonists sharing their work as having that string to the bow I feel like I can never attain. I talk about how easy it is to share photos, videos, audio, text, metadata when it comes to geographic locations. If only I could draw something, I used to think.
Spike Milligan used to illustrate his books, and you would think, as an artist, no great shakes. But actually, the enthusiasm with which he would draw, and he would just have no limits. He'd have no kind of hang-ups about his own ability, and therefore, his drawings are very clear. They're incredibly clear as to what he's trying to get across. They're fantastic. And what I, as you're in the social space, one of the great things that I like at the moment are people who are connecting Instagram photographs and animation or cartooning. So there's a Brazilian guy who will take somebody else's Instagram photograph and will draw a cartoon on top of it and turn it into something new and creative and funny. There's a guy called Marty Cooper, Hombre McSteez, who goes out and he has these bits of cellophane that you would use in an overhead projector. Have you? Yeah. So, well, he's done an advert for 7-Up, and that's kind of...
And he superimposes...
He superimposes. He will draw a cell. He will then photograph it with his hand in the photograph, holding up this... And he'll do that 12 cells per frame, and then he'll create a little animation. Fantastic stuff. And that's kind of... I find that really interesting, how people are bringing together a little bit of hand-drawn stuff and a little bit of going off tangent here, but a little bit of social media and combining somebody else's work often as well and bringing that in.
I know a lot of people believe this is, you know, one of the most amazing and wonderful uses of these spaces, the ability to build on other people's work, the ability to not only share our culture but kind of evolve on top of it. And copyright would obviously have a way with all of this.
Well, famously recently with the Power Rangers, I'm not sure if you saw this, but a Hollywood producer did a 10-minute short of the Power Rangers. But the Power Rangers, like the Black Knight, you know, that kind of Batman dark feel to it with twists and turns and blood and gore. And it's as a little film to watch, it's fantastic. I enjoyed it. But hell broke loose because
it was better than the original.
Well, it was hardly difficult, Christian. But basically, the creators of the original said, well, this is our copyright. And it got into this big row because the producer said, well, now you're infringing on my, is it the First Amendment? Yeah. Freedom of speech. I'm not quite sure I'm with him there. I don't see how somebody protecting their copyright is an infringement of the First Amendment. So, but you did get into those realms. And the same producer did something recently with Judge Dredd as a continuation. In fact, I think he was the producer of the second Dredd film, which, if you are familiar with the Sylvester Stallone film, so far away from the actual Judge Dredd, it's ridiculous. The more recent one is actually very good. And I think he's the producer of that. And then he produced a animated short as well. But, of course, this is somebody else's intellectual property. That he seems to have got away with. The Power Rangers one, even though it's very enjoyable, he was challenged on.
How does Lucas feel about all of the Star Wars fan fiction? He seems to be pretty relaxed.
I think that's a great point you raise, because I always wondered about this. Because if you look at Robot Chicken, if you look at Family Guy, I mean, these are genuine money-making operations. Now, maybe they license the characters, I don't know. But then if you look at... there's that wonderful Eddie Izzard bit where he's Darth Vader on the Death Star, and he's trying to get to the canteen. He's in the canteen, nobody recognises him, and he's actually trying to order a meal, and the bloke's going, well, who are you? And then somebody did that with using Lego characters. So there's copyright infringements going on all over the place. You've got Eddie Izzard's original, you've got the Star Wars copyright on the Lego characters, you've got Lego's copyright on its own characters. Makes you wonder. I think George Lucas probably approached pretty good. Monty Python. It's a very good example. Yeah. They, I think, originally were very uncomfortable with people ripping off their stuff online and putting their stuff up. And then very soon, to their credit, they realised, this is brilliant. This is amazing. This is free marketing.
Yeah.
And I think they actually actively encouraged people to put their stuff up online because they knew they were going to make more money that way.
And I love it when people kind of get it like that, and you know, people like Metallica famously don't get it, and then people like, was it Radiohead who ended up putting out a kind of Pay What You Want album and made more money on that album than everything else they'd ever done, or something crazy. Those experiments by the brave, sometimes might only work once or twice, really do push forward the models, I think, as well.
I think so. There's a guy called David Hobby in the States, and he set up a lighting blog, a photography lighting blog. And he basically, he was a newspaper photographer, and would create the most amazing photographs for his newspaper using very small flash guns very quickly, because he was out and he'd have 2, 3, 4 assignments a day. So he started blogging about his techniques and the gear and the DIY stuff he made. And the blog really became very, very popular. And his accountant said to him, you know, you should monetize this. You should charge a subscription fee. And he said, I'm not going to do that. I'll make more money if I don't. And what he did was he released a DVD box set of tuition. He was giving talks, and this is how I met him. He told me the story. Not that I have a special bond with him. There were 20 other people listening to the same story, I should point out. And he was saying, so when he released this box set, and it cost him a lot of money to produce, and he sold them for $180 a pop, and he had 1,000 produced, and those 1,000 sold out within 24 hours. So you can do the maths. And the reason they sold out in 24 hours, he built the audience by giving that value, by saying, no, I'm not going to charge you for anything. Have it all for free, and then when I actually release something, and you might want to pay me for it, well, everybody just fell over themselves to do it.
They just wanted to give something back to someone they were obviously learning from, and that is a great, you know, evidence of a term I heard a few times today, value exchange, working in action. I'd love to be able to offer and continue to offer that kind of value, and it's interesting how I've seen the photography model changing along these lines, with not being paid so much for my prints anymore, but being paid to be there with the camera.
I was going to say, you do, because you provide on your blogs, your website blog, but also on all the other social media platforms that you use to give information. You're giving all this information for free. There are great interviews with people where you listen to them and you can learn something. There's always something in what you do that is either educational, inspirational, or entertaining, and those three are all values. They're all value to a listener, and you're doing that for free. So now you need to get to the point, well, you're attracting an audience in terms of clients who are going, well, you know what you're doing, so you're monetizing it maybe that way. But
you are reminding me, I guess I forget sometimes, because there is that zero motive for me taking out my phone now and having this conversation, which I just started recording. We didn't think talk about what should we talk about or anything, other than I would like to capture this moment, because we are rarely in the same physical space, and you're telling me of the perceived value that can come off the back of this conversation, where there might be a photographer sitting there right now that you can give an absolute golden tip to. I'm going to ask you to do that in a second, so get thinking hard. A photographer sitting there right now going, I'm struggling because maybe I'm not niche, or maybe the weddings have dried up, I have all this equipment, what can I do as an individual to shift my thinking around models, business models.
Here's an example that it's worked for me in a small extent, to a smaller degree, and I know it's going to work for a guy in Chicago hugely. I did an interview recently with a photographer in Chicago who is going to do a podcast, and you might think, well, photography podcast? Are we waiting for another photography podcast? Well, his isn't a photography podcast. His podcast is going to be interviewing business people in Chicago. Now, just think about that for a second. He is a corporate commercial photographer who is now going to host a business podcast in Chicago. So what does this do for him? Well, first of all, it raises his profile as the guy who does the business podcast. Second of all, it gives him an amazing excuse to knock on the door of people and say, hey, you don't know me. I'd love to interview you and build a relationship. Can I interview you for my podcast? He doesn't have to mention he's a photographer. He's got his foot in the door. So imagine any CEO or company that you would give your eye teeth for, your right arm, to have a first stab at a relationship with. Well, if you have a podcast, you can do that. It can be about your local community. David Hobby, the guy I just mentioned, his thing now is he has this blog where he photographs people in his community, and he's building up this whole blog about the community. But of course, then he becomes known as the photographer who does this thing. So if you need somebody to photograph in your community to photograph your business, then David Hobby is the man for you. Just like this photographer in Chicago, who on Instagram is I Phoned It In, by the way, which is a great Instagram.
And I've seen his work.
It's very good, yeah. So to come back to your question, what can you do to improve your photography business? Well, first of all, you have to understand that photography as a standalone business is difficult. People are doing it. It's not that it's impossible, because people are doing it every day. But if there's a way that you can get yourself in front of an audience that you're not saying, hey, hire me to do my photography, build the relationship first, because then the business will come. And if you could, I've done it myself in the food community on a small degree in Cork as well, where I was able to build relationships, and then people were asking me, hey, could you do our photography? And I did it through a food blog, and I was just writing and photographing, and all I wanted was to connect with them and write about them and promote them and learn about their food. And yeah, then you get known as that person.
I love the fact that you know, you'll see people in the town centre with their lights set up, and they will photograph your baby one free print in the hope that you will succumb to that, and then you'll see five amazing prints sitting next to the one that you can pick, and then they cost like 25 quid a print at 6x4 or something, and you're like, oh, I've been done. He's doing the podcaster is doing a souped up version of that. He's basically offering so much value along with it. It's a very similar model. He's going to be able to take a photograph of those people while he's interviewing them. It's going to be an astounding photograph, and they're going to go, the side effect of you giving me a platform to talk about what I do was that I get a great business portrait of myself. I need to keep in touch with you.
Absolutely.
It's gold.
It is gold, and it's done in such a way that, and also there's the
give, and then walk away, because people are going to remember the kind ones out there.
Gary Vaynerchuk calls that, and he's got a book by this title, which is Jab, 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 Right Hook, which is basically...
Sounds like you're beating them to senseless, though, but...
Yeah. Well,
I like the give, walk away, and if something comes of it, wonderful.
Well,
doesn't make a good book title.
It's a bit long. The right hook is actually the ask, and then you say, it's what David Hobby did. Give for years, give. Hey, I've got this thing, you might enjoy buying it. There's massive value there for you if you do, would you consider it? Mm. It doesn't have to be buy my stuff. It doesn't have to be in your face. It's all very subtle. You're relationship building. And what you're doing is you're growing this sense of, I know you, I like you, and I trust you, and I'm grateful to you, and now I have an opportunity to give back something back to you. It might not be today, it might not be next year. This is the long term, this is the long game here. This is not going to make you any money very quickly.
Well, that's a really interesting point, because I was, when I was travelling, initially going to I did start writing the first few pages, and it was going to be Blagger's Guide to the World initially, but I thought that's going to be filled with all kinds of illegal tips and tricks. So, and then the other option was Supplement Your Life. And the supplementing of the life was, you know, why do you want money? Normally it's to buy services or things. Why don't you just exchange your skills for the skills of the person you're looking to hire anyway, and just remove, and don't tell the tax man this, obviously, just remove money from the equation. And that happens every day in my life, because it is a part of my life. And you do it when somebody says, can you come and photograph this food? Some of the first photography I did for money was in Thai It wasn't for money. It was for the meals in Thai restaurants in Chiang Mai. I had a camera with film in. I says, I'll photograph 24 shots. I'll give you the film. Can I eat everything I photograph? And they're like, yeah, because I found a place to get really, really cheap film. I didn't even know if it was in date, but they were happy.
But you once, yeah, and then it's all foggy. It's all out of focus. But you've done this almost to the extreme, where you've gone from the length of Britain with nothing more than a data card, and people have, in return for you doing something with that data, given you services, given you a lift, given you a cup of tea, what have you. And that's not
the thing. Is that looked like a stunt? But that's a part of my life. I'd much rather take money out of the equation, because sometimes the conversation gets dirty sometimes.
Yeah,
I have to pay the mortgage as well.
Well, this is of course where it kind of does go off the rails a little bit, because it doesn't wash with the banks, of course, and it doesn't wash with the people that run my credit card, for instance.
You're talking about the capitalist society we've subscribed to.
Yeah, absolutely. and that sometimes actually serves certainly me quite well. How do you get around this? I worked on a study last year, and they were looking at these alternatives, these ideas of exchange economies. And I heard a podcast by a lady called Maaike in Holland, and she does the Your Business Story podcast. She interviewed a lady in Canada who figured out, well, wouldn't it be great if you love cooking, but you don't have all the gear, because the one time that you need that really, really tiny little tool device thing
for getting honey out of a jar without dripping,
yeah, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, do you really have it? Do you need it? You're going to make this dish once, and all the paraphernalia. So why not have a library that you can go to and subscribe to, and you can say, any recipe I want to make now, I can go to the library and I can get all the kitchen implements that I need to make it. And she's turned that into a business. So buy once and then loan out into the community as and when people need it.
Wow. So it works on a postal service?
No, you drop by. No, maybe there is a postal service element to it. It's city-based, community-based idea. And I think she actually was influenced by people who do this with tools. So you're a DIY, you're going to do some DIY, but do you really want to go out and buy that power drill just for that one time that you might hang up a painting?
Yeah.
You just go down to the library.
I pitched something similar to a university recently, and it was I kind of borrowed the idea from the borrow room from the Circle, although there were some examples that I'd implemented before there was a cool name like the borrow room, and they were going to get one of every of the latest technology that really excited one of the people in the administration, because they realized toys, the big room filled with toys, we're going to have a drone, we're going to have a foldable kayak, there's all this crazy stuff coming out. But all of the students could go away on a weekend, providing they could come back with stories of what they did to show everybody outside of the university how rich a student life these individuals were having. It was marketing budget to buy toys so people could play and talk about their playtime.
But here again is the value of the story, and if you can give people the tools that will help them create the stories, be it a foldable kayak, and my goodness, you can imagine the stories that somebody with a foldable kayak
forgot to clip it into rigid mode.
And if they were brave enough to admit that, because this is the other thing, I mean, you need to be honest about it, you need to go, yeah, we tried it and we broke it because we took it off and it sank and we've lost it.
Well, that's the same university, same person. I said, we need to reward academics who don't do this. They don't talk about failures.
Yes.
They keep their failures secret, and then they release the finished book, and everybody goes, wow, how did you get to this? Oh, I don't want to talk about it because I made loads of mistakes on the way. Well, the best mistake of the month gets a holiday.
Well, James Altucher's podcast is all about, so he interviews really successful people, rock musicians, captains of industry, and what he's interested in is, where did you go wrong, where did you screw up, were you almost practically suicidal, or in some cases were you suicidal, how did you get through that, what did you do next, what did you learn? Because that's where the valuable learning is I made a mistake, this is how I got round it. This isn't a recipe for somebody else, but at least you have an insight as to how you might be able to get around the situation you're in.
And this level of learning has normally only been kind of nurtured and explored, I hope, within the family. Because you hope that should you bring a child into the world, they are going to get the chance to learn from all your mistakes, skip those, make their own, and become an even better person. You hope. I think, you know, so it is a me version 2.0, but hopefully them version 1 taking and throwing away the 2.0 version of me.
Yeah, let me gift you 15 years of your life because you don't have to make the same mistakes and go through the same things that
I'm sure in reality nobody ever listens to their parents.
No, I was going to say, did you listen to yours?
I got to witness a few mistakes that I hope I never repeat.
I'm with you on that one. Yes, I did learn. Yeah. But yes, children. I suppose it depends at what stage you're grabbing it. Teenagers forget it; they know everything better, and often they actually do. But yeah, that is the learning. The great books about how things are done and how somebody achieves something are a litany of. I screwed up, but I hung in there, I made some changes, and then this happened.
Did you think you'd be doing what you're doing now back when you were in school?
It's a really good question, because I did one of these assessments, and I came out as being perfect material to make movies. And at the time I thought, oh, that's impossible. Nobody where I live makes movies. No, there's no future for me. I grew up in an environment, sort of very safe, very... people weren't necessarily encouraged to go out and do stuff, and but look at me now. A part of what I do is I make mini movies for companies to tell their story and get their genuinely impressive products and genuinely impressive personas out into the world. So, did I think I was going to do this? I always wanted to be a photographer. I always wanted to be a cartoonist. So part of me must have believed that I could do it. But yeah, here I am out actually making money, being a photographer, making some films, hoping to earn some more money doing cartooning again. I did years ago, not much, but I'd like to do more of that.
You wouldn't want to do anything else?
I wouldn't want to do anything else, no, not really.
I wish I'd gone to your career guide person. I think they told me I could either be a preacher or a politician. And I wanted to be a stuntman. And I tried it and actually realised that being a stuntman was quite dangerous.
Yeah, it sounds as if your guy was working off some kind of... Did you fill the form in right?
I mean,
did you?
No, I lied. Obviously, I lied. I took it as another test I had to cheat on. I'll be as random as possible.
I think, were they looking at you going, yeah, I don't know, have we got... Are you sure?
I think he listened to my name, Christian Payne. I sound like a preacher. And funnily enough, an anagram of Christian Payne is Preach Insanity. And if you go to preachinsanity.com, you will see the cocktail of that very name. So please spread the cocktail around the world, because I'll probably never get around to writing a book.
I think you should write a book. You should most definitely write a
I've
book.
I've got
about...
three on the go, but whether they ever get legible.
Because, and let's put the question back to you. Okay, so you were told you were going to be a preacher. Clearly that's not really worked out for you.
Well, it's weird, because preachers tell stories.
Yes, exactly.
Politicians tell stories. Yeah. One thing that's carried me through from the very beginning of travelling and... meeting people in carriages and connecting with people. I always have connected people through small talk and stories, and now I get paid to tell stories to get ideas of consultation across, to tell stories in order to hopefully inspire people at a conference when I'm a speaker, and I tell stories to hopefully get lessons across which then equip people in training. So I feel like it's the only thing I can do.
It's interesting that you didn't come out as a teacher.
It's a part of my job, I guess.
No,
a teacher is.
But in your assessment, that they didn't say you could be a preacher, a politician, or actually you'd be a really good teacher.
No, because I think they had my qualifications in front of them, and you do normally need qualifications. Yeah. And I was commenting earlier on. I've been now for 8 years at the Open University, heavily involved, and I'm probably the only person ever been at the Open University for 3 years. Sorry, 8 years, and never had it. You know, don't have a qualification at the end of it. But I'm not there to do studies.
You're not a vindictive man, I know, and I'm not really either. But my mum, I got turned down for the Photographic Academy in Holland, and my best friend...
Oh, was that the place that burnt down? No, joking.
No. Yeah, well, soon afterwards, yes. No, and my best friend got in, and I went off to do... And I ended up with a degree in anthropology, and he did the Photographic Academy.
Anthropology? But that sounds perfect.
I have no regrets about that. But the irony is, I'm the one who ended up making a living as a professional photographer. And ironically, he then went off and did anthropology.
You're not separated at birth and you're just learning from each other's minds. I don't know.
We mind melded somehow. And you never see us in the same room at the same time. But my mum said you should go back to them because I'm a reasonably good photographer. I'm a good photographer, and
I've seen your work. I will vouch for that.
My mum keeps saying you should go back to them. You should make them pay. Make them know. Tell them what you've achieved. And I said, well, there's no point. You know, the people who turned me down are probably dead now anyway. So it's funny how. To come back to your point, and we were talking about kids as well, you just as a parent want to be able to say to your child, whatever it is you want to do, that's what you should do. Whatever it is you're not good at, well, we won't dwell on that because you obviously don't like doing it. So as long as you can get your passing mark, great.
Yeah.
But what you're good at, let's do more of what you're good at.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what it is because, quite frankly, the sky's the limit.
Yeah. And I feel quite liberated because as a person who was pushed quite wholeheartedly and forcefully into engineering. You know, I did go to university briefly and I was forced to do pure maths along with a theoretical physics kind of course, which I really wasn't into. Theoretical physics, all right, a lot of thinking and stuff, and I did like physics. I was destined in everybody's minds to be an engineer because engineers are always going to have a job when I see a lot of redundant friends who carried on, whereas I bailed out. And now when I look at my children, I do take some solace in the fact that I can't push them into anything because what they're going to do probably doesn't exist yet. They are entering a world where roles and jobs and industries are being invented monthly, and that's quite liberating. Just be the best person you could possibly be, and because it's about who you know a lot of the time.
It is about who you know, and I think you make a brilliant point. Yes, I can't give you career advice because I have absolutely no idea what jobs are going to be available when you come onto the jobs market. Just be happy.
Yeah. Maybe learn a bit of coding, just so you know the background of all of this.
Yes, exactly. Learn a bit of coding.
And how to talk to people and communicate.
Absolutely. Talk to people. Know what makes them tick. Be a good listener. And be able... You know, don't be afraid of the world. And engage with people. That's a very important skill as well, I think. Which I think is the number one. If anybody's looking to learn from you, forget all the tech stuff. It's the engaging with people in the world. Because what you do brings all the good things into your life because you connect so easily with people and you embrace people and you bring them in, and you just show how beneficial that is. So don't be afraid of the world.
Thank you very much indeed for boosting my ego somewhat, and that's the last should have been closing lines, but I'm going to ruin it now by continuing to waffle at the top. Thanks very much. It's very nice to be in the same physical space for you for once, and to capture that hopefully forever, because I know this is backed up away from whatever platform this is being delivered to, because we can't trust these places anymore.
It will always exist somewhere, but whether somebody will have access to it, well, that's a different question.
Think about these things and more, and I should put an advert at the end. Now I've been talking about business models, because I don't think I've ever advertised on any of my podcasts. I've even got a support page on my blog, which is hidden. I've taken Bitcoin. I think somebody did send me 0.0001 of a Bitcoin once, but it is there.
If you can, a small apartment in Manhattan now. Or yeah,
probably. I should check. I can't find the keys to get into my Bitcoin locker. So I could be a gazillionaire by now. I don't know. We're not doing it for the money. We're doing it because we both love what we do.
We do, exactly.